Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Guten Tag, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a new episode of the Football Ramble. It's Monday the 6th of July and I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I am Jim Campbell.
When the weekend finishes, the Football Ramble begins, ladies and gentlemen. It is the pick-me-up we all need. How are you doing, Messrs. Brassel and Campbell?
Good, mate. You?
Marvellous.
Excellent, thank you. I feel so much less tense not having to go last on the register. Yeah. I've not worked out the flourish yet, but Jim's was very, I'm Spartacus!
Yes.
Yeah, headliner. So,
last
that person,
and certainly,
are you calling me the Sultans of Ping FC? Sorry, 90s reference for everyone out there.
Don't you worry, Andy. Don't you worry. 90s references will not stop there, my friend, I feel, in this show. I'd like to begin by talking about those Saints. Not the Utah Saints, but the Saints of Southampton beating Manchester City 1-0.
Yeah.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you defend deep in numbers in a narrow fashion.
That is how you score a first ever Premier League goal.
Oh, I mean, wow.
Come on. He's been saving that up.
Big Che. He shares the same birthday as me, which is coming up soon, ladies and gentlemen. No, I'm not going to say the date. They need to do the research. I'm not going to, you know. But yes, Che Adams with 40 yards. Was it 40 yards?
It's got to be knocking 40, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think it was, there was a lot of talk of this in commentary. Do you think it was a bit of a sort of tactical spot from Hasenhüttl to see like, That space does open up sometimes. Mm-hmm. If we kind of target this, maybe we'll get a bit of joy. Cause it.
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh.
I think so.
I love that.
Yeah. That's like proper espionage level goal, that. That's like an Ocean's 11 goal.
Is that what we're calling tactics now? Espionage?
Yeah.
is that what English football analysis is?
Yeah.
So if we've got a little sort of hierarchy of ne'er-do-wells, we've got... Sergio Ramos. Yeah. Then above that, we've got drug cheats. Then we have people who do tactics at the very top. Right, okay. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it's all about passion, isn't it? That's what football is.
Is it like a Cold War? If you sort of, you know, you want to play long ball, they're playing tiki-taka. That is a Cold War. Damn it all, ladies and gentlemen. I know that phrase is out of fashion now. Was it ever in fashion, ladies and gentlemen? Perhaps only to a few of us. But yes, 1-0 to the old Saints. A brilliant goal. And they were closing Manchester City down, and they call Hasenhüttl, or we've heard him referred to as the Alpine Klopp.
Mm.
And Klopp certainly knows how to have a go at Pep Guardiola's side. I mean, he didn't the other day, but, you know, less said about that, the better. As one or two people mentioned on Twitter, were Man City partying too much after that Liverpool win? You know, so therefore there was a bit of a hangover in this game. But they did, they closed them down. I don't know what you mean, Jim, that kind of thing is targeted. And if it, you know, the percentages...
When it comes off.
Well, but the percentages are so small.
Mm.
It's like someone sitting around the table going, right, red 17. Red 17,
completely.
It's going to come up red 17, and of course you'll lose most of the time. But when you win big, baby.
Yeah, absolutely, and you look like you can predict the future. it's brilliant. Yeah, it felt like a cup game, didn't it?
Did
it was like the teams, because it was on the BBC, forgot that it wasn't a cup game and just went at it like it was. A performance from Southampton as well, though. Like they really did just revert to being just 10 defenders on the pitch, and Ings and Adams were instrumental in kind of like being the outlets for what was behind them. And obviously Jack Stevens was man of the match, and he was fantastic, but also Kyle Walker-Peters put in a big performance.
McCarthy James made Ward some really Prowse. Good saves.
He really did. Yeah, they were all so focused.
And I wouldn't have picked that, because I know the feeling is as Southampton that McCarthy will probably be gone at the end of the season, and they need a new goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course...
Joe Hart.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go. That one game shouldn't change that, I don't think. But, you know, if it's a way to sign off, it's a pretty good way to sign off, right?
Well, it's not too shabby, Andy. But you're right, Jim, it did feel like a cup final. And Manchester City really didn't want to lose. Of course they didn't want to lose, but they really, really didn't. And it was just, it shows you again what you can do. Now, without Aguero, okay, but, you know, they've got enough in there. Defend deep in numbers. Yes, they've got the lead. So there's a difference there. You know, the thing's got to go for you. It's all very well saying, well, that's how you should defend. Well, if you're 2-0 down, there's no point in doing that because the game's gone. But you get the lead to defend that resolutely. A little bit of good fortune as one would need. You look at the squads, for crying out loud. And they defended so well, and it was everybody on the line, and that's why it looked like a cup final at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just a siege mentality from the off, wasn't
yes,
it? Which is it's so impressive when a team actually pulls that off. And I tell you what, I think this has been the best use of the fake crowd noise that we've yet seen.
I agree.
Because it really pumped it up, didn't it?
And there was
a point where they thought Southampton had got a second one and pressed the wrong button, but I love that.
Oh, well, that's to be expected.
No, exactly. I'm into it.
Yeah.
I like the idea of a crowd getting it wrong.
Mm. It was the first game I watched where I thought, I don't hate the crowd noise, actually. I think I started off as a bit of a skeptic on that. And I think, well, fair enough, if that's how... You watch these games, then fair enough.
The mistakes are funny.
The mistakes are enjoyable, yeah.
What was the game the other day where there was a shot that hit the side netting and they did the... Yeah,
oh, that's happened a few times,
and it went on for slightly too long before they went... Ooh.
I think Chelsea...
I think it might have been Chelsea-Watford.
There was Chelsea Man City, I think it happened.
Right, okay.
It was Mason Mount, I think.
Yes, that's right. It has happened a few times. But Andy, what do you think of Manchester City? Pep is at a loss as to why they've lost 9 games this season.
I think that's more than Arsenal.
We can tell him here and now. His team keep giving away absolutely horrendous goals. I mean, it really is that simple. You know what? I think to frame it like that for Manchester City, I don't think is right, because it's like one of those things when people look at the numbers from a game and, you know, one team's won 4-0 and the others had more shots, but maybe they've had all those shots after the fourth goal. So it doesn't really mean anything. The fact that however many games City lose in the Premier League between now and the end of the season, they're still highly probable to finish second. And it doesn't matter. And it hasn't mattered for a long time. It's been about the cup and overall the Champions League.
Yeah.
Isn't that sort of kind of contrary to Guardiola's style, though, the idea that everything matters and that it's all about creating this precise way of playing that is just like that you can tack onto every game and use to just overwhelm opponents?
Yeah, I mean, I think
like a drop in intensity, which, to be fair to City, I don't think they actually showed.
No.
Southampton were just incredible. But still, they didn't find a way through. He's going to look at that and surely think, well, mate, what if we lose the first game of next season? You know, how I need to address it.
Oh, yeah, it'll piss him off. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
A lot and pisses him off, to be fair.
He's an intense gentleman.
Oh, yeah.
But I think he always talks about the worst mistake of his coaching career being when, in his first season at Bayern, he said...
Away at Barcelona?
He said, for us, the league is over. And then, accordingly, they have that little 5%, 10% drop in intensity. They play really poorly in the Champions League semi-final against Real Madrid, where they lose away despite having, 75% of the ball.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're absolutely hammered in the return at the Allianz. So it will matter to him. But as you say, Jim, I don't think the intensity has dropped with Manchester City. What I do think, though, is that it is just painful how the faults in the team are becoming more and more obvious. And that's clear that they've got a big summer ahead of them. How that's going to pan out, whether they're in the Champions League or not, we don't know. But that has been the big difference, hasn't it, between them and Liverpool this season. Mm. The fact that City have to play well and defend better than normal to win a game, or play exceptionally well sometimes to win a game. Liverpool don't. Liverpool can grind games out as well. Mm. And I've seen people say, well, Liverpool are actually less fun than they were last season and the season before because they have that ability to grind that maybe wasn't there a couple of years ago.
The way he tightened up the defence, Klopp, is absolutely magnificent. For a manager to have his obvious sort of philosophies and so on and then be able to turn it like that.
Yeah.
And still, by and large, keep it. I understand they might not be as swashbuckling, but I mean, you can't do everything, you know, and clearly the results and the trophies speak for themselves.
For an established coach like that to evolve in the way that Klopp has is incredible.
It is simply magnificent. Yeah. Who do you think in full flow is the more pricklier, Klopp or Guardiola? Because Klopp can be a bit underrated with the old prickles, as we saw the other night, although it was to Jeff Shreves, and I know that's been talked about. But Guardiola, as we know, can be a little bit salty.
I think it's Pep. He's a little...
Do you think?
Yeah, he's a sort of...
Even when Klopp's in full rage?
I think in full rage, Klopp is... I don't think prickly is the term I would use. Like...
Spicy?
Spicy, I think...
Sassy?
Pep is like...
Volcanic.
Pep is a porcupine emerging from a cactus in terms of prickly when he's in full, like, peppy... Uh-huh. Peppy prickle mode.
Yeah.
Sort of sentences that.
Lovely flavour of crisp. Yeah.
Peppy pricked a peck of pickled peppies.
But Klopp is just straight up angry, isn't he? Mm. He's not hiding his emotions. I think with Guardiola, when he's prickly, he's trying to not be annoyed.
But isn't Guardiola...
That's where the prickles come out.
Isn't Guardiola always hiding his emotions?
Yeah.
I think so.
Like either whether it's joy or whether it's... intense, like skull-burning annoyance. Whereas the thing is with Klopp, because he apologises for everything,
he can
do anything he wants. Yeah. It's like, you know, when he was with Dortmund and he tore a strip off the fourth official at Napoli and he goes, oh, I behaved terribly. It's like, well, yeah, he did.
You do see
everyone goes, oh, it's fine.
You see him sort of check himself. Who would you rather fight, Jim?
Who would I rather fight? This is a tough one. Because...
Didn't think you put that much thought into it.
Well, because Klopp...
Is Pep not a bald fraud?
He is a bald fraud.
Well, do him then.
And he got his bald fraud of honour the other day, and that would have annoyed him. But I feel like I would hate to punch Jurgen Klopp. And he's obviously quite a tall man. They'd both batter me, obviously. But I feel like Guardiola would want to win so much, he might dismantle me. So I think Klopp. I think Klopp and I would shake hands afterwards, and then we'd probably go for a pint.
You get an apology. Gentlemen, let's move on then to the Arsenal. It wasn't 1-0 to the Arsenal. It was 2-0 to the Arsenal, away to Wolves, who were a good team. Arteta's army march on. They ended Wolves' 8-match unbeaten run. Jim Campbell.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I wasn't expecting a win, being completely honest, because the fixtures that Arsenal have are... I felt like this was the start of a particularly difficult run, and it was a big test. But I was impressed by the functionality of the win from Arsenal, actually. They were very, very calm.
Southampton-esque, you could say.
Well, they got the second one late on. But it's nice to see Lacazette getting a goal away from home.
Great striker's goal. I call a striker's goal, Andy. Very the touch away from the defender. Have that. Jermaine Defoe-esque.
Very much so.
He is in general, isn't he?
Jermaine Defoe-esque, wow.
Do you not think Lacazette has got a touch of the Defoes about him?
Maybe. I feel like Lacazette's more of an all-round footballer. I love Defoe, but he's a striker, and that is innately what he is. Mm. Whereas Lacazette, you can stick him on the wing and do a great job.
His hold-up play is very different from Defoe's as well. But I mean, in terms of that finishing, That kind of like...
I mean, that particular finish, it did remind me of Defoe and his pomp. But what about Saka's goal? I mean, what a week he had. He said after signing a long-term deal with Arsenal, it's been a week I'll remember my whole life. And it's always so lovely to hear stuff like that.
Isn't that because his life's been quite short to this point?
Yeah. Well, okay,
he doesn't know
Andy.
What he's going to remember.
let's not marvel in a young man making it into the game.
No, I've heard enough. Sell him.
Fair enough.
It was a lovely finish, wasn't it?
His decision, Jim, goes, though.
But it was a lovely finish, wasn't it? Because it was a little bit behind him. Mm. And he said a really interesting thing about Kieran Tierney. He said, I know how KT crosses. He likes to put it a bit behind. You think, if you're Mikel Arteta, sort that out. Like,
it's not really where you want the crosses
I'm
going.
I'm fooling the defenders with this one. Well, you're fooling us too, mate. All right, but yeah, it was a lovely composed finish from him, and he was asked after the game about what his best position is, and he gave a very sort of correctly diplomatic answer that he's happy to play wherever the manager puts him. But he was putting an amazing shift in at left back to the point where people were talking about him getting an England call up as a left back
for the Euros, which of course didn't happen.
He's moved a bit further up now, but he's a fascinating prospect because I don't know where he's going to end up playing long term, but
it might not be Arsenal if he carries on.
Well, indeed.
Lol.
But it's just incredibly impressive wherever he's been. Obviously, I would hope to see him play further forward because he's got goals in him. But he's been an unexpected bright spot. And in fact, the young players that Arsenal have brought through, it's been a very trying season and a very difficult season for lots of reasons. But the young players have been the real bright spot from it, and it's good to see them just that. I think the break in the season has made it feel like this is almost their second season. Mm-hmm. You know, they feel a lot more part of the squad than they maybe would have done if the season had finished by now. And they're a very, very welcome positive.
Yeah. Well, Andy, what do you think of Arteta and in charge of Arsenal? Because a lot of people are saying he's the right man for the job and it's a bloody difficult job. I think if you look into those eyes of his, there is terror and there is anger and aggression. And dare I even
probably learnt it from Pep.
Dare I even say, yeah, he has, if you know what he has. You know Pep Guardiola, you look into his eyes and you go, oh, there's Pep. Oh, let's not go too deep because I might find a little droplet of evil. And I think there might be a globule of evil in Arteta's eyes. It wouldn't be surprising me if he was like a member of the Sith.
Maybe. I think with Arteta, he's better hidden because Guardiola is always like worn Stone Island and stuff like that before he's taken his current sartorial downturn that we're not going to get into because that brings him far too close to Mourinho, as we talked about on the Ramble last week.
Yeah.
What is interesting about Arteta, he's a very classic Spanish gentleman. Mm-hmm. He dresses like he's just been through the menswear section at El Corte Inglés.
Yes.
You know, the big department store in Spain.
Yeah.
It's all very, very proper. Mm-hmm. But what really interested me about Arteta's post-match comments is how he was saying, that the lads did great, et cetera, et cetera, that they kept the shape, they pressed. But the manner he had to him, as if, oh, yeah, we discussed it and they did it. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
It's a massive big deal
that
he got them to listen, that he got them to do it, because it's been so uneven so far. And as you say, that's brought home what a large job it's been. Mm. But with Arteta, I think we started talking about the clothes, or at least I started talking about the clothes.
Feel free to carry on if you want.
Because so much of it is about the optics.
Mm-hmm.
I think because he has a plan, he has a philosophy, mm-hmm. and because his predecessor, and Emery's being linked with some interesting jobs at the moment, including mm-hmm. Benfica, for example, there's the sense that Arsenal have at least a hint of a direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes an enormous difference. Because his projection is so different from Emery, whose message was so unclear, mm-hmm. I think that makes a huge difference to how much time he'll have to do this enormous job.
And it goes down to the clothes choices.
Definitely.
Channeling the spirit of Roxette.
But I feel like... yeah. I feel
they're like, on a joyride. I mean, dressed for success, sorry. Carry on, Jim.
I think the hint of an idea point is an interesting one, and also it is a massive deal that the Arsenal players are simply listening to instruction. But I think a lot of that has come from him making a very clear and potentially difficult decision with Guendouzi in one case, because Guendouzi obviously, you know, for whatever reason, he's apparently seems to be becoming a bit of a difficult character, and it's evidently become some sort of problem in terms of discipline. And I guess, you know, Andy, you'd be like, you'll understand this, Andy, in particular, but
he earns more than us.
Earns more than us. Yeah, he earns more than Neil Lespay, for example. But you know, when you're working on a piece of writing, right, and you've got this metaphor or you've got this thing that you want to get in there, and it's not quite working, and you think, I'll come back to that and I'll fix that later, and then you get to later, and it's like, I'm just going to get rid of this. And then it all works. The whole thing works.
You just put it in iPhone notes for later,
exactly.
Don't you? Maybe use
Absolutely.
It in a future composition.
Yeah, and
composition.
That's what Guendouzi is at the moment, I feel like. Because if he's becoming a bit of a problem and he's not listening, which seems to be what Arteta's issue is, it's like, all right, just bench him for a bit, or not even bench him in this case, and the team is just beneficial to it. And that is the sort of decision-making that Arsenal have needed for a while.
Well, I wonder, though, Jim, if Guendouzi just hasn't changed at all. Because... I think if you look at him, he's always done exactly what he wanted on the pitch.
True.
And because there was such a vacuum of leadership and a vacuum of personality.
An overt sort of passion, if you
see. Yeah, like to see a player who wants to cover every blade of grass, whether that's useful or not, was something I think that was seen as a positive thing by a lot of Arsenal supporters, or even a lot of neutrals. I mean, I spoke to people who knew Guendouzi pretty well from when he was at Lorient as a kid. And I remember someone saying to me, a director of football saying to me, when he heard Guendouzi had signed for Arsenal, he's like, are you joking? like not that he wasn't talented.
Yeah.
But as they put it to me, he was a kid who would just turn up in a tiger suit one day because he felt like it.
Mm. And, that's a Bowie man-esque.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And they have lacked that. They have lacked that since where he went. And, you know, it's just, it's Matteo. He just does whatever. And so they found it very difficult to see him in this sort of elite club context. But I think actually, if you look at Guendouzi, you know, sartorial choices notwithstanding, he's not really changed the whole time long. And that's the problem, really, isn't it?
Mm. That is the problem, Jim. I think we can all agree. Gentlemen, but it was a great win for Arsenal, and they're on the march.
It was.
They are on the march.
It seems strange to end on that sort of note. It was positive, with an absolutely horrific run to come. So let's see.
we shall see, indeed. Before we go for a break, just very briefly, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't mind, we're going to dip into the Championship and the canal. Because I don't know if you saw this. This is a tweet from Nottinghamshire Police, who said, officers attended... because obviously Forest, of course, played their fierce rivals Derby on the weekend. Officers attended a report of persons in a canal opposite Nottingham Station. A Forest fan had jumped in to celebrate a win over local rivals, unaware of the late equaliser. Hashtag wounded.
Mm. I love that. Like, hey, we've won the Derby, so into the canal for me.
Yeah.
Oh, bloody hell, there's been an equaliser, right? Now I look silly.
Yeah.
Now I look really dumb.
Yes, if Chris Martin hadn't have bundled that equaliser in the 98th minute, I'd have got away with that. I'd have been a local legend forever.
I'd have come out dry.
Don't you think part of it's, though, that I think it might be have something to do with the Twitter character limit, because when it says a Forest fan jumped in to celebrate, he could have been poised there on the riverbank or the side of the bridge or wherever he was. He goes, right, he's got his phone in his hand, he's pressing refresh, he's going, right, the minute it says FT on the BBC ticker. I'm going to jump in. And you press the refresh and you slip and
you're
away.
Or was he maybe on a tree and it was a tricky tree?
Oh,
I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, let's have a break.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Join me, Pete Donaldson, and Japan-based YouTuber Chris Broad every Wednesday as we offer the lowdown on what's happening in one of the most unique and exciting countries in the world. The Abroad in Japan podcast is home to all things Japan, from things to do...
So today we've come to you guys with 12 places in Japan that nobody knows about.
...to the bizarre...
When I moved into my new apartment last year, the police guy came to my door, knocked on my door, I opened it, it was a policeman, and he said to me, in English, I am Japanese policeman. That's the best introduction you could possibly do as a Japanese policeman.
To the downright filthy.
And for those of you that don't know what a tenga is, Pete and I did discuss how to describe it best before doing the podcast, and I'll let Pete describe what a tenga is. What is it, Pete?
It's a solo male silicon-based ornanist's aid, so to speak.
Brilliant.
New episodes every single Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Abroad in Japan is a Staccano production.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble. Now, before we look back at some of the other Premier League matches from this weekend and dip into European football as well, it's time for a recap of Betway's 4 to Score. Every week, pick the first goal scorer in Betway's 4 selected matches and you could be in with a chance of winning a huge jackpot. We play along as well, revealing our picks on the preview show each week. Game one was Andy's, Burnley versus Sheffield United. Andy picked Sanderberg, but it was James Tarkowski. Vish, on his first outing in 4 to Score, fared much better, picking Mikhail Antonio for West Ham against Newcastle, who scored after 4 minutes. An incredible start to Vish's 4 to Score career, and it is a career there, so getting that right. I think I've only got one right my whole time, so he's shown me up. We were back down to earth, though, with Liverpool versus Aston Villa, as Luke picked Virgil van Dijk, and it was Sadio Mane who scored after 71 minutes. And in Southampton versus Manchester City, Kate went for Phil Foden, but it was, of course, Che Adams who curled home that brilliant winner after just 16 minutes. And that Che Adams goal ruined the days of two Betway customers who had Tarkowski, Antonio and Mane going into that last game, but they didn't have Che Adams. Gutted because they missed out on the jackpot. So no winners means the £100,000 jackpot rolls over to this weekend. So make sure to get involved and we'll be back with another round of picks for Betway's 4 to Score on this Friday's preview show. Back to the Premier League, ladies and gentlemen. Manchester United 5, Bournemouth 2, Mike Dean's beard.
Oh, I love Mike Dean's beard because as we know, he has to be different, doesn't he? And a lot of footballers have got like slightly too long hair because they can't get to a barber. So does this mean that Mike Dean refuses to shave his own face?
Yep.
Does he have like a wet shave guy that he can't get to? Because why has he suddenly got a beard?
This is a bit like, you know, when I found out Beck had like a personal grooming team that followed him on tour. If Mike Dean did, I mean, that would push me over the edge. It's a bit like, you know, when David Beckham first grew a beard and he said, yeah, I went camping with the kids. I mean, I don't want to like compare Mike Dean and David Beckham too closely, but, you know, maybe that's the rustic look he's going for.
How long did he go camping with the kids?
Beckham?
Yeah. Not long enough to get that, surely.
You see, a little Cockney voice came over you then.
Well,
how long do you go camping with the kids for?
I'm too sorry, mate.
Waking Epping Forest.
I like his commitment to that. The sort of, I'm going to do the whole mountain man look to show the kids what beards are like in the wild. I don't know.
I'm going to show them what it is to be a man.
I think Deanie's, you said, you know, the footballers, some of them got slightly longer hair, much like ourselves and so on. I think Deanie's...
Like ourselves. Please, don't be modest, Marcus.
But I think Deanie's sort of thinking to himself, you know, like, guys, I'm just like one of you. You know, I'm suffering as well.
He's going to grow out a big one and get two, like, tattoo sleeves. He's going to have a proper midlife crisis.
I'd like him to have
go
a bit
full
of
hipster. I'd love that.
A bit of a ZZ top affair. But anyway, Manchester United, the Red Devils with another. This vintage Manchester United, lads. They're flipping back, aren't they? I mean, if Vish was here, he'd be cock-a-hoop, no doubt. They hadn't scored 5 goals at home in the Premier League since 2011. That's extraordinary.
That really is, isn't it?
Alex Ferguson was still in charge the last time they did
that.
Wow,
yeah.
That's what I mean with vintage Manchester United. And under Ferguson, they'd often win these games. Sometimes they would go a goal down. They weren't kind of like 5 or 6 nil winners. Yes, they would, but they would concede the odd one here and there.
And then it was vintage Man United in that they went a goal down and that really annoyed them.
Yes.
And it was actually probably... It might have been better for Bournemouth to not have scored.
Like, yeah, I know.
Probably lost by less.
Would have been. It was the manner of the goal as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was taking the piss.
Nutmegging Hazard Maguire, so slightly. £80 million man.
David De Gea being beaten at his near post.
Yeah.
But let's not focus on him, Addy. I want to focus on the midfield and the forwards. Matic, Pogba, Greenwood, Fernandes, Rashford, Martial. That looks very healthy.
It's very attractive. Mm. And... I know we'll talk about Mason Greenwood in a minute, and quite rightly so. But Bruno Fernandes is interesting. Reading a lot of chat about him on the weekend by people talking about his influence on social media. Clearly, he's turned Manchester United's season around. Mm. But I have seen people claiming he would walk into any top side, Bruno Fernandes, and he would be brilliant for any top side. I love Bruno Fernandes, and he was amazing for
Sporting.
You've
been talking about him for years. Now.
Yeah, and he's been seamless in the way he's transitioned to Manchester United. But I think there's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he is brilliant, but I think that the reason he's settled is because he's mature. He's come over older than a lot of players would do to the Premier League. To have that sort of talent and wait till he's 25 is quite unusual. Mm-hmm. But he had the whole... Not just Portuguese football education, but the Serie A finishing school. Mm. So he's tactically adaptable and tactically smart, as well as having that bit of life experience. Then he got to be the cock of the walk at the Sporting before coming over. So it's not like a player normally just going from Sporting to Manchester United. Like how difficult the teething period was for Nani, for example.
Yeah.
It was nothing
Cristiano
like
Ronaldo.
Well,
it was.
Yeah, he wasn't Cristiano Ronaldo as we know it.
Roy Keane needed to duff him up a few times, apparently, if the legend's to be believed.
Yeah, I'm not sure he'd manage that nowadays. Now he's been doing 3,000 sit-ups a day for the last 10 years.
I was about to say, Andy.
The power of hell inside him.
No, the thing is, Roy Keane falls into old man hard. That is the honest truth of it.
Sorry, back to Fernandes.
But the thing with Bruno Fernandes is what's helped him adapt so well more than anything else is the fact that he went from being the best player in the team and being able to dictate at Sporting to pretty much doing the same thing at Manchester United.
He's joined the right club at the right time.
Yeah exactly. He's not had to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to really shape the team to his will.
He's a talisman.
Rather than the other way around. He's a leader.
Yeah.
And he gets to be that leader.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to play risky passes. He gets to drive the team forward. He gets to really lead by example. And there's loads of other top clubs you wouldn't be able to do that. The idea that Manchester City. Yeah.
How do you have gone to Manchester City? Because I thought to myself, this guy's surely got the pick of the clubs here. And I often wonder, why? I mean, it seems ridiculous. That's where Manchester United are. I thought to myself, well, he could have gone to a side who was playing better. But as you say, if he'd have gone to Manchester City, he has to fit into that system and do that. Whereas at Manchester
United, it's a lot more problematic.
He can be essentially the talisman.
He's found the club that's needed him most effectively, and they've probably sold him on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So fair play to Ed Woodward for once.
Tottenham fans might slightly disagree with you in terms of the club that needed him the most.
I don't recognise them.
Okay, fair enough.
I see. Let's talk about Mason Greenwood then, Jim. Two delightful goals with either foot, and there's much talk about him being as good. You know, people say, "Well, I genuinely don't know which his preferred side is."
Yeah, absolutely, and I would be one of those people. I forget who it was that said if you asked him, he wouldn't know. I think that's probably a stretch.
if he doesn't know, then none of us know. Yeah.
but he's got 14 or 15 goals, something like that, across various competitions already. Yeah, which
is a much higher tally than I think.
Exactly, right? I think actually it makes me kind of happy that he isn't being touted as the next Pelé, as players in a similar position would have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And also what I find really interesting is a lot of people are saying, well, if, you know, do Man United actually need Jadon Sancho? And it's like, yeah, I think they still need to strengthen. They still need to put some depth in there. But, you know, the idea of those two playing together is very, very exciting. And he looks not just a prospect for the future. He looks like a mainstay for now,
which is such
a rare thing.
Jim, does this make you not buy Jadon Sancho? And obviously they're doing very well at not buying Jadon Sancho by saying we're not going to go over 50 million.
Yeah.
I think they would be better off strengthening in other areas potentially.
But I think the thing with
that kind of money.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they have available to them, so obviously that's going to make a difference. But I think the thing with Man United is that we talk about this front line they've got in this game.
Mm-hmm.
That's all well and good. But past that, the drop-off is quite big.
Well,
I think they need more depth.
Well, at least a some sort of proper forward. I know Martial's done pretty well, and what a goal he scored. But to give him another option, I think, really.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean,
Zlatan's free at the end of the season?
Well.
Yes, please.
Come on. He'll never stop, so he will always be open to some of the bigger clubs. I mean, but also the defensive situation. I know they have some sort of decent centre-halves like Lindelof and Maguire and so on. When you see Eric Bailly give away a penalty like that.
That was...
do you think...
trying to wave to the ball or something?
Wasn't that Matic's fault for the pass, though?
Well, yeah, but I understand Matic is a ridiculous pass, but the worst Matic does is give away a corner. And whereas Eric Bailly's, you know, response to that is, well, I don't want to give away a corner, so I better give away a penalty.
I just don't think he expects it there.
How much does he not trust?
The way that Matic hit it, you could have been forgiven for saying it was a beach ball.
Andy, come on.
If you throw me your car keys and then I dive in your car and crash it into a lake, it's not on you, is it?
Yeah, exactly. How much does he not trust...
I should have put the handbrake on.
How much does he not trust David De Gea with crosses that he'd rather give away a penalty than a corner? That's what I want to know, ladies and gentlemen. My goodness. What about Bournemouth themselves? They're struggling big time. Fortunately for them, they host Spurs this week. Lol. But after that, they've got Leicester, Manchester City, Southampton and Everton. And obviously, including Spurs in that list, joking aside, Jim. They are 1 point from safety and a bit of goal difference chat and so on, although it's quite similar. But you look at that run-in, Andy. I mean...
That running looks worse even a week ago than it does now. Yeah. I think that's the one positive thing you can say for Bournemouth in this situation. I mean, really the problem is them though, isn't it?
Mm.
It's not anything else. I mean, what have they lost? 16 out of 21 now?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, it's a terrible state and they just don't look to be responsive anymore, do they?
No, and that's the problem, isn't it? I think, you know, we're all assuming Norwich are down. So Bournemouth are that last one where you'd look at their run with a bit of terror. But actually, because they don't look responsive, I don't think it matters what that run looks like. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They look just as likely to lose to Norwich as they would to Liverpool.
Yeah,
it's just though, the body language.
We saw this a few months ago. I think, was it not before the lockdown? It must have been. When Eddie Howe, he looked dejected. He looks
like he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, he looks scared. And you thought to yourself, this club is really sort of almost like moulded around Howe. You know, he's presided over the most incredible period, you would argue, of their history in getting them in the top flight and establishing them as a Premier League side. You know, absolutely remarkable job. And even if they do go down, it's still a remarkable job. Mm. And it would be a great shame if they change coach. We'll have to see if they go down and if they did that. So there's still, an incredible period Howe's had, whatever happens at the end of this season. Let's be clear about that.
Well, Vish and I were both saying last week how really that Bournemouth identify too strongly with him and he identifies too strongly with Bournemouth. And, of course, they're way past the point where firing him, even if that was possible.
So if they identify too much with
make
him
a difference.
And then he's looking a bit scared, what does that show? You know, you could say with other clubs, I mean, to a sort of lesser and bit of a different degree, and I might be tangling us up unnecessarily, but say like with Pochettino and Spurs, you know, when it was all kind of beginning to kind of slow down, inertia sets, you know, we see that Spurs still haven't really got out of that. As I say, not a brilliant a parallel to choose, but with Howe at Bournemouth, like you worry, and they don't look like they have any sort of, I don't know, sort of a spark there to try and get it. I mean, Aston Villa will be looking at Grealish as they always do, although Graham Souness was saying how, well, if you get fouled that much, then you're doing something wrong, and oh, I'd love to play against him. You know, when Souness gets all competitive and starts putting his shin pads on, and you're all right, Graham, that's enough. But of the sides down there, I would say that Villa might have a better chance of getting out of it than Bournemouth. But it's looking bleak. And Luke has been very clear in recent weeks on the Ramble as his three that will go down. And with the Ferryman picking up the odd point now and again with West Ham, you would think it looks pretty bleak for Bournemouth and Aston Villa. But it is still tight down there, ladies and gentlemen. It's still very tight and it's all to play for. Before we go to Germany, Jamie Vardy. Jamie bloody Vardy. He has scored 101 Premier League goals in, what was it, his 206th Premier League appearance. Absolutely remarkable, considering he made his Premier League debut at the age of 27. He's reached he's a centurion in the Premier League now. He was handed a little commemorative trophy by the club, presented by Brendy Rodgers. I mean, come on. You know, if there's anyone who needs to be thanked, actually, Rodgers did say he was like, I'm very proud of the fact that I was here when Jamie Vardy did that. And I was like, yes, Brendan, you are a part of this delicious narrative.
There goes Jamie Vardy. I must remember to thank him.
But it was, he got given a little sort of silver fox thing. But amazing, Andy. That, like, I know we go on about Vardy and he was playing for.
I thought he'd been given enough for that day already after his first goal. Really?
What a way to do it.
I love the way he missed that chance. It's like, oh, am I ever going to score again?
Mm.
And literally 15 seconds later, he was being presented with a goal.
And Harvey Barnes like got a big old hug from Vardy, isn't it? Because Vardy isn't really one to sort of...
Well, it would look weird if he'd have hugged the defender.
Yeah.
Well, that would have been more in character, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
it would have been.
Well, Barnes just swearing in his face. I done you.
Barnes got two assists, or Harvey two assists, as he's now called, Andy. But it was a great goal, the second one. Just let it go, thanks. It was the second goal. It was vintage Vardy, as he sort of powdered on the goalkeeper. He's three behind Didier Drogba, apparently, and he's done it in 50 fewer games.
Here's to 99 more, you absolute maniac. I love it.
He's a flipping...
He's my favourite player in the league.
A force / freak of nature.
Yeah, it's such a unique set of circumstances with Vardy, isn't it? He just revels in it. And it's very un-English in the kind of...
And yet very
ways.
English.
Yeah, in terms of... It's very English in, like... you'd expect to meet a character like that, like... pool sharking you in a pub, not playing in the Premier League, and just that reveling in succeeding and being confident, and I love it.
I can't imagine him ever like slowing down, and I mean that sort of emotionally and physically. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't.
It's all the Red Bull.
Yeah. what is he? 33, I think, 40, something like that. I can't imagine a through ball, like, even when he's like 45. If like there's a ball, he's walking down the park, he'll be onto it. It's just a remarkable player. Remarkable. Right, Lynn, let's move over to Germany. It was the DFB Pokal final, as I believe they don't pronounce it in Germany. Bayern Munich, they won convincingly. Who would have predicted such a result, Andy?
It's a shock.
Yes, they beat the company's 11, Jim, yeah, your boys. But do you still care about Bayer Leverkusen?
Yeah, a little bit.
Do you? Okay, I stopped caring pretty quickly after Andy gave me FC Köln.
Well, they did their best to shake you off, didn't they?
They did bloody well.
With their dreadful form.
It doesn't take much to shake me off, I tell you. If they wore England kits, though, I'd be into it. But yeah, the treble is on, Andy, for Bayern.
Yeah, it certainly is. There was never really much doubt about it. They were excellent, particularly in the first half. They had a few little wobbles, and really the moment that turned it is where Kevin Volland was played in by Moussa Diaby, who had a really good game. Volland, very reliable striker, 8 yards out against Manuel Neuer, no defenders in the way, takes a total air shot. And very shortly after that, Neuer comes out on one of his wanders, clears the ball upfield. Lewandowski takes the volley really early after it comes straight to him from Neuer's kick. I mean, honestly, it was Besant to Fashanu. It was magnificent. But Lewandowski hit it so early that...
Besant to Fashanu.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. That Lukas Radetzky, the Leverkusen goalkeeper, just was a bit panicked by it, really. Didn't get his feet in the right place, fumbled it in the back of the net, all over. So while the tail of the dog wagged a little bit for Leverkusen, or Neverkusen, as they are known in Germany, because they've not won a trophy since 1993 now. Yeah. I mean, this is nothing compared to the 11 days in 2002 where they blew Cup, League and Champions League. But still, it does feel as if they're kind of jinxed. Although the minute you're in a final with Bayern, you know you're jinxed. Mm-hmm. But really, all the talk afterwards wasn't really about the cup final itself, because we assumed that they would get to the second leg and set themselves up for the possibility of the treble when the Champions League comes back. It was about the future of a couple of the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Thiago Alcantara, who's hugely talented, of course. Has he said that he might fancy a move abroad? Is that the sort of rumblings?
Well, another challenge, a final challenge, was how Karl-Heinz Rummenigge put it, that he was leaning in that direction, because both him and David Alaba only have a year left on their contract. Now, there are two sides to this, and Rummenigge said, look, we're going all out to keep Alaba, and he's been hugely influential for them playing as centre-back. And he's helped Alphonso Davies come on as well. He's been next to him, sort of talking him through the games. And Alaba's more valuable than ever. Scored the first goal in this cup final with an absolutely unbelievable free kick as well. Mm. But Thiago's an interesting one, because obviously Liverpool fans reading the speculation, a lot of them very excited about it, particularly because he's maybe the one sort of player they lack. You know, that sort of threading the needle type player. I have a few little doubts over whether this would be a great pickup for Liverpool, because it's not that he's 29, it's that he's taken a lot of injuries, and you know, he's rarely started more than 25 league games in a season. So to go to Liverpool, to the Premier League, I wonder if it's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Given his injury record, given that relative fragility
and how much running you have to do in that Liverpool midfield.
Mm. Yeah.
But I mean, Bayern are, you know, obviously they're not at the intensity of the Pep Guardiola days, but it's still a comparable work rate, is it not?
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think it's interesting how in the final stanza of the season he's been less missed, because you've had Joshua Kimmich is in midfield now, and Leon Goretzka has come on and on and on. And I wonder if there's half a sense of, you know what, if he goes, like, it's a shame, but maybe we can do without him. I mean, Leon Goretzka, just to underline how much muscle he's put on, when they were doing the trophy lift when they won the league at Wolfsburg last week, they're all having their little thing to create atmosphere, because obviously they're celebrating the league in this empty stadium. Goretzka goes up to lift the trophy, and as he starts lifting it, you've got a teammate on either side pulls his shirt sleeve back and starts tapping his big muscles.
I thought you were going to say Lewandowski jumped in the trophy and then he picked it up without a care in the world.
I swear, he's put on so much muscle, he's put on height. You know what I mean? It really looks that way, doesn't it? One of the things that, if we can just go back to David Alaba, that I'm surprised that, you know, I'm not surprised that Bayern are trying to keep him so much because of what a great player he is and what a versatile player he is. But how is he still only 28 years old? It feels like he's been around forever.
Yeah.
I think that's something that's accentuated by the fact that he's played every single position for Austria.
Yes.
Probably even goalkeeper, even though I don't remember it.
And also he was really young when he made his debut for Bayern, I think.
Yeah, he was.
Mm-hmm. He was indeed. Well, talking of veterans of European football, we go to La Liga. Sergio Ramos. I mean, what is Ramos now? 34, is he? Again, a bit like Vardy, I can never imagine him just sort of stopping and not doing his routine of shithousery and then scoring vital goals. Mm. Hey, what was it? His 22nd consecutive penalty he'd scored.
I mean, he's become like the third La Liga defender in the last 40 years to score 10 goals or more in a season.
That's Fernando Hierro in there?
Yeah, and Ronald Koeman. Of course.
Oh, yeah. Ronnie K. What lustrous company.
Yeah, it's decent.
Ramos, it's incredible. Real Madrid and Barcelona, obviously, there's a proper title race there. Madrid have got the advantage. But it's Ramos's coolness and sharpness and naughtiness, Andy, that's dragging them over the line currently.
Yeah, because
or threatening.
I don't know if the more satisfying thing of their win at Athletic Bilbao was his beautifully taken penalty, or the fact that 5 minutes before he pretends to fall over and stands on Danny Garcia's ankle.
Yeah.
Now this is either epically stupid or, you know, cunningly brilliant, depending on which way you look at it. I mean, defending-wise, he's still a loose cannon, but he's just such an all-round incredible player. Yeah. And you used that word earlier, talisman. Mm. I mean, he's absolutely unpsychoutable. Mm-hmm. And that experience is extraordinary. When you think of, you know, Manuel Neuer and Bayern taking the piss out of him for missing that penalty in the 2012 Champions League semi-final shootout, obviously he got his own back when they got to the final. but still, you can never imagine him clouting a penalty miles over the top now.
No.
It just wouldn't happen.
Mm. I mean, Ramos, too, he's absolute box office. In our generation, or let's say Ramos' generation, to be more, one of the most entertaining players,
humans.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. It's remarkable.
Yeah, it really, really is, because it's not just the quality of his play and what he's won and the goals and you know, that this new kind of found dead-eyed penalty specialism, but it is the it's the shithousery and how he actually uses it in a way that unsettles other teams to the point where it is a genuine huge advantage to Madrid. How do you replace that?
Yeah.
It's irreplaceable, isn't it? That this guy can sort of just have this kind of charismatic effect on his opponents. I did enjoy. I watched some commentary on this game that was clearly somebody speaking in their second language, where he described the situation as a trod.
Yeah.
The penalty was given for a trod. Yeah. I'm into that. I think we should try and sort of usher that in. But can I also say, just while we're on Madrid, we've spoken a lot, and I've spoken a lot about the hair of players and players with slightly too much hair. I think Marcelo looks cooler than anyone than anyone else in football at the moment. His slightly too big hair suits him so much because he's grown a slightly too big beard to go with it. And it's, yes, more Marcelo.
Indeed. Before we finish, Andy, obviously a little mention for that Griezmann goal, Messi backheel assist.
Oh, my goodness. And this would have been the weekend that finished the league if Barcelona had lost at Villarreal, which was a distinct possibility because Villarreal were in great form. But it all clicking all of a sudden. And Messi, who actually does pass to Griezmann quite a lot, as it happens. Brilliant back heel and wonderfully finished chip by Griezmann. Lovely, very satisfying hug between the two of them. And as well, we have to say, Luis Suarez, who is certainly not going quietly from this Barcelona front three or two, or whichever way they do it, 2+1, as it was a Villarreal last night conversation. Luis Suarez is now the equal third goal scorer of all time for Barcelona. He's level with Ladislao Kubala with 194 goals. Second is César Rodríguez with 230. So I still think it takes a bit of imagination to imagine
who's top.
Suarez catching it. The thing is, he's not just top. He's top by a margin of 400 goals.
It's Romario.
Oh, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah. Like, and I think I don't think I'll ever get bored of waxing lyrical about Messi and Ronaldo as well, and the ridiculous records that they've set. It is a,
and nor should
you. Nor
should we. Talking of records, this is where we're going to end the show, ladies and gentlemen, because that is all very impressive stuff, I think, absolutely. But this is very, very impressive as well. In Serie A, big Gianluigi Buffon set a new Serie A appearance record, playing in his 648th match, overtaking the great Paolo Maldini. At the age of 42, 43. It's just phenomenal. He did it in a 4-1 win over their local rivals, Torino.
It's amazing, isn't it? And it's also phenomenal that the person who held that record was an outfield player.
Yeah.
Like, you look back and obviously it's Maldini, but that's when there's a player that's made that many appearances, it is so often a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But it's Buffon, it's just...
I know this is a theme of this show, but again, I can't imagine Buffon stopping.
No, he's going to play again next year.
Yeah.
So who knows how long it will be, because he's played a few more than we've expected. But going back, like all the time to when that debut was made, I think that was the last time that Cristiano Ronaldo scored a free kick before the one that he scored against Torino this weekend.
Yeah, his first in 43 attempts for Juventus.
It feels like more.
Just to put it in perspective, when Buffon made his debut in 1995, it was for Parma, I think, Up on the Roof by Robson and Jerome was number one in November 1995. Gangster's Paradise by Coolio was number two. And Wonderwall, slightly on the way, and it peaked at number two. It was at number four in the charts. That's when that man made his Serie A debut. Absolutely remarkable, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll finish the show on that note. A lot of record-breaking chat there by our very own record breakers, Andy Brassel and Jim Campbell. It's an absolute pleasure. On tomorrow's show, Kate, Pete and Vish will be in your ears. So do look out for that. But until then, cheery bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.